remember me.
They won't let you read because of certain reasons, but almost everything is filed. It's all in docket sheets. And it's when you see these people in big cases, I like to see what they're up to, because I found a case by just reading the United States. I call it United States in this, of course. It's amazing. It's a brief for the United States. See, now it's United States because it's in Ray. Because it's a mandamus, but they come in as the United States, under the government of the United States. So they're in their proper character. But what they brought in, it's an amazing Supreme Court case. They say Article 3 compels that conclusion because it demands that an actual controversy persist throughout all stages of the litigation. Why is that important? All stages of the litigation, you got to have an Article 3. How can I use that? Oh, my goodness, is that spot on. Take the Mooney's case. The United States of America brought the initial thing to steal their property. United States of America. Went to the Federal Court of Claims. which I found out was Article 3 from 1953 to 1982. Then it went to Article 1, Section 8, Clause 9. And then they got a 28 U.S.C. 25, I think it's 2515, says they're going to use the common law in equity. They can't do it, folks. Oh, we're going to act like we can. Then they have a rule of court in their own damn thing that says we don't do common law evidence. Well, what do you do for evidence? You can't make this stuff up. Do they? Thing is, without Westlaw, you can't easily track this stuff down, or if you don't do it like I do, I check everything out because I don't believe anything they write. So we have a court of claims that says they're going to do common law and equity, and the rules of court says we don't use common law rules of evidence. So what do you do? Where's your evidence? If you don't have no evidence, you got no court. And there's cases like these territorial courts. They can't act like the Article III courts because they're not set up under Congress to accept it. They can't look like it and really be true. So why is this important here? Starts off, United States of America, filed into the Federal Court of Claims as United States, also known as United States of America. The federal court took it United States of America. Now we're into the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals, but in United States. Now an attorney shows up as a counsel for the United States. Well, who was the guy that started the bottom? We never could get the guy at the bottom in the United States District Court, the Article I Tribunal, to say who he is. Who the hell are you representing? Are you counsel for the United States or counsel for the United States of America? Wouldn't say. They can't. Congress has no standing to bring this stuff. United States of America is a sovereign body politic, and I got 110 damn cases from the DOJ, and I put it in a public record. All identify the courts, name, parties, everything. Tell me it ain't so. So now we got a problem here. We don't have the same party that's starting this nonsense in the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals. So now I've got a couple other things I got to get done, but I want to get around, because I got a little time on this one, to challenge the standing. Who? Why are you here? The United States of America is supposed to be the real big thing. And then an Article III court, this is the latest, let's see, what is this one? It's 2019. Three elements of standing are a concrete particular injury, fairly traceable to a challenged conduct, and likely to be redressed in a favorable decision. None of that is true on the IRS stuff. No, it's not true. Unbelievable. Another one of these says a state has standing to defend the constitutionality of its statute. Well, let's see here. I have a statute that says I am going to use the Internal Revenue Code, it's IRC, which actually wasn't even, it's not even the United States Code, it's Internal Revenue Code. So the state has to defend it. It says I am going to adopt the gross income definition. Well, they got to defend it. Can they? No. Because it's not even a law of the United States. You know why? Laws of the United States is in Article 6 of the Constitution of the United States. Because, you see, they started off with statute laws of the United States, 1789. Then around 1900, all of a sudden, we started, let's call it both, laws of the United States and laws of the United States of America. Then pretty soon, we'll leave out your laws of the United States and just laws of the United States of America. Then we'll get around and we'll say laws of the United States of America, and we'll say public law. Then we'll leave off laws of the United States of America. So in 1937, it's just public law. PL, you see that all the time. It's public law. What the heck is that? That's where there's a sovereign and we're slaves. Look up the definition in Black's Fourth. Public law. What happened to the laws of the United States? Well, there's no Congress, folks. That went away in 1913. How do we know that? because you see in the 13th Amendment, it says people of the state. I'm sorry, the 17th Amendment. People of the state. Well, that's not what it says in the Constitution, Article 2, Section 1. Article 1, Section 2, I think it is. Let me pull it up here. Get it straight here. It's hard to keep everything in my mind. It's Article 1, Section 2. The House of Representatives shall be composed of members chosen every second year by people of the several states. They just left out the word several when they did the 17th Amendment. Just one word. You know why? So they could define the word state like they do today. State means we can make it mean anything we want. Who's going to look up your voter registration stuff since 1993? National Voter Registration, look up the definition of state. No, we're not going to do that. We're going to go in and vote and think we're voting for public officers of the several states. That don't exist, folks. They admit it in their briefs. They will say we are a sovereign. North Carolina says, I'm a sovereign state of the United States of America. What the heck happened to the United States? Sovereign state of the United States of America? The Constitution says the Constitution for the United States of America. And it's the Constitution of the United States. And the government of the United States is in there. It establishes it a couple of times. So where did the government of the United States go? You and me, we did it. Started back at the Civil War under Union, under Reconstruction Acts. They created a fictitious citizen of the United States, 14 Stat 27, 1866, to have the same rights as white folk. It's still in the code. They can't get rid of it. 28 U.S.C. 1981 and 1982. Look it up. 28 U.S.C. 1981, 1982. Then they put it in the 14th. They ain't got nothing to do with the citizens of the several states, 13th and 14th. Oh, see, we have the organic Constitution, Amendments 1 through 12. 13 and up is all about citizens of the United States. And the American Law Review says, guess what? The citizens of the United States ain't got nothing to do with the 10th Amendment? That ought to wake people up. The 10th Amendment says what is in this Constitution is reserved to who? The people and the several states. Now, since we got citizens of the United States, the 10th Amendment doesn't apply? Whoa! Wake up, people! If the 10th Amendment don't apply, who the heck are the citizens of the United States? Oh, it's a status like a landlord, like a tenant. And how do they do it? They get us to sign up for it. Everything we do is buried in there. I guarantee you. There haven't been any laws in the United States since somewhere around in the 1920s. And by 1937, it's all over because all we got is public law. And there are no elections for them. There's no Congress. Technically, there's not even a president of the United States. Because a citizen of the United States has no, guess what they don't have? Supreme Court said, so you've got no right to an Article 3 constitutional court. You got no right of taxation without representation, because that's not in the Constitution for citizens of the United States. Supreme Court said so. You have no rights and remedies of anything except what Congress gives you. We are under the plenary power of Congress, just like those folks in D.C., because they are pristine citizens of the United States. And that's a fact. Easily proven now. And they have to file IRS. You see, when the Ways and Means Committee out of the House of Representatives went after Trump for his income tax form, they said, we have a voluntary national taxation system. I believe it. Those are the idiots that legislate it. They put it in a complaint. It's taken as true. You just can't make this stuff up. I mean, it's pure evil. It's an overthrow of our republic with you and me consenting. Or do we have any constitutional courts? No. Except the Supreme Court of the United States. We are back to the old star chambers. You know what the star chamber was? It's called the Cruel Trilemma. Cruel Trilemma. What does that mean? There are three parts that they used to use for the most star chamber courts. The first one, you have to self-incriminate yourself. You have to confess your sins, just like in Braveheart. Confess your sins. And all do it puts you out of your misery. Confess your sins. How does it work? Let's just take books and records for the Internal Revenue criminals. What do? They send you out, and they actually call it an inquisition, to an idiot from the Internal Revenue Service that ain't got squat, got no power, no nothing. And he sits down, and he puts you under oath. You can't ask any questions. Thornton tried that. Are we right? We tried that in Thornton's case. He don't even know what the hell's going on. He don't even know the different subtitles of taxes. He's a little trained robot. But if you don't give the right answers that he is expecting, you have to confess. He comes back and says, you're not compliant. But you're under perjury, so that's the second part of the cruel trilemma. This guy's got no power to do nothing. But you're under oath. But the judge says, you got to go out there. Oh, yeah, good books and records. He says, come on, confess your sins. You had income. You had gross income. And you say, no. I don't understand the question. You don't have. Now, what's the judge do? Yes, this is real life. This happened in Thornton's case out of Minnesota. She finds him in contempt of court. You didn't give us the right damn answers. And she says, that's clear and convincing evidence. Clear and convincing evidence is the highest level in a civil case. Now, she's not even an Article III court. Clear and convincing evidence from what? An IRS agent that conducted an inquisition. Not adversarial, inquisition. Give me the answers I want. That happens in all books and records. Wake up, people. So it went to the appellate court, and they went to their rules, and now we agree, but there's no enforcement. So they come back and threaten him with jail, put him in jail. Next thing you know, he coughed up a couple hundred thousand, and he's got another safe, and he calls him up, and he's all scared, and I can't go to jail, and gives him at least $500,000. He broke. They got him on the stand. They broke him. It happens. Guaranteed. There's a lot of pressure when you're, especially people that got to be in it for the right reasons, for truth, not money. I'll tell you how I overcame it. First time I was up on a misdemeanor charge for driver's licenses, people, they had a break and they stopped and everybody's giving me all this stuff and I said, what the hell am I going to do? About 20, 30 minutes or I just had no idea what, you know what I came up with? I said, those people up there are the devil. They're some arm of the devil. And there ain't no way in hell I will ever submit to you. I don't care what you do to me. I'm going to stand and fight. I will never bend a knee. I will never do anything. I don't care what you do to me. And then it came to me. Ralph, just like this. Ask him what a citizen of the United States is for the jury. Because they all said they are. Why is that important? Because, you see, you have to consent to everything that happens to you. But we don't know. I've went into the state. I used to get the permanent fund. They call you in. Anybody here not a citizen of the United States? Raise my hand. Well, I'm talking to the judge, tell her why. I walk out the door, and everybody's sitting there. What the heck happened? Everybody sitting on that jury has already filled out a form, state or federal. Back in a minute.
Folks, we're living living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Okay, well, we're back. What's amazing, this house is called the Virginia House of Delegates versus Bethune, Bethune-Hill. What's amazing, and one of these things, it's only got, it's 139 S period, CT period, 1945, Supreme Court. Doesn't have a U.S. site. And I'm wondering if they don't get around and the stuff that's truly constitutional, they just give it a Supreme Court case. I don't know, a site. It's been a year, and it doesn't have a U.S. site. So I'm very suspicious. I don't know the answer to that yet. That's one of the things. I'm always looking for things that, if they're not consistent, why did he do that? It's not accidents. Not accident. But it goes on to, it's amazing, this case. They're talking about the controversy persists through all stages of the litigation. The standing requirement, therefore, must be met by persons seeking appellate view, just as it is as met by the persons appearing in courts in the first instance. So the guy that came in as a counsel for the United States, it's got to be the same as the guy on the bottom. Well, he don't match up with the plaintiff. And then they got another. A jurisdictional requirement standing to litigate cannot be waived or forfeited. They cite four of the cases that cited. You can't waive standing. And I got a brief on standing. We put that into the Federal Court of Claims, and the judge there sat on it for 13 days before she put it in paper, and then she come back and said, oh, that United States District Court is Article 3, and we can't check their stuff. She can't answer it. I got more. I'm gonna have it on steroids, lady. I'm coming. And I'm going to publish it. I'm going to put it on the people on the list. Read it yourself. Standing can't be waived. And it's got to be the same from the start to the end. How do you go from United States of America to United States? They did that in Kirkendall's case. Never been done before. He was criminally prosecuted. We filed in to go to the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals. They inadvertently put it into the Fifth Circuit. We finally got it out of there. So this same attorney, now, that was in the Fifth Circuit, was counsel for the United States of America. When it got to the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals, it was the United States. She's counsel for the United States. And then went back to the lower court. She's back to the United States of America again. How do you do that? The Supreme Court is point on. I haven't had a chance to read it all, but I read the highlights. I said, wow, boy, this is good. This is really getting good. They got another one. When standing is questioned by a court or an opposing party, the litigant involving the court's jurisdiction must do more than simply allege a non-obvious harm. To cross the standing threshold, the litigant must explain how the elements essential to standing are met. Boy, can I do that. Who are you? Is there a government of the United States of America? Where did the government of the United States go? They're not the same. There's the Articles of Confederation for United States of America. And then for a more perfect union, there is a Constitution for the United States of America, which is the Constitution of the United States, comprised of the several states. Ain't nobody home, folks. It's all there. Because these guys like to play word games. They'll file in the plaintiff, United States of America, then on behalf of the United States, on behalf of means for the benefit of, which means United States is not a real party of interest. You can't use the word behalf, folks. They do it all the time. I see these criminal trials. I try to get the transcripts of the few of them that I've been involved with or others. Always. And I've sat and watched one. Guy that was Alyeska. Worked for Alyeska Pipeline. What do they do? Now, to get into the jury pool, you have to fill out a form that says you're a citizen of the United States. Same thing in Alaska. They ask you. You have to fill it out. You have to say, I am. Now, what happens when you get into the court? Before jeopardy attaches, once they get rid of all of the thing, they get down to the jury members that are going to sit there. They need your permission for you to step into the star chamber with no law, and the judge, without exception, federal court in Alaska, they'll say, is anybody here not a citizen of the United States? I have never. The attorney doesn't do anything, and you're sitting there like, well, I don't know, seems all right to me. So you're volunteering to leave your inalienable rights from the Creator and step into a star chamber where United States of America, that's Congress, by the way, has plenary power. How do we know that? Go look up 28 U.S.C. 132. 28 U.S.C. 132C. Judicial power of a district court. Judicial power of a district court. I looked it up. I found two cases on it. Do you know what it says? It says that is an Article 1, Section 8, Clause 9 tribunal. It's an Article 1. It's a legislative court. It further says the court is represented by the judge. The judge is represented by the court. And another case says the court is under the control of Congress. So the judge is representing the court, which is Congress. What the hell is going on here? That don't sound to me like an adversarial thing. It's rigged. And they bring in regulations. Article 3 cannot. There is no crime with a regulation because there's no case, there's no controversy. It has to be a statute of the United States or law of the United States. They can't go there. And then to add insult to injury, they cite the statute, Internal Revenue Code, and then they cite regulations like a Part 301, 26 Part 301, 6211 or 6212, which is for deficiency, or one for assessment. What is a Part 301 reg? It's housekeeping. There's a statute, 5 U.S.C. 301. It's only for internal use. The Supreme Court said it's smoke and mirrors nonsense. Doesn't mean spit. James in Alaska, question or comment?
Hey, Ralph. I was just wondering if you'd had any experience asking to be confronted with your accuser when the complainant is the United States of America.
Let me think on it. Have I asked for? I mean, have I fought when the accuser is United? Oh, absolutely. In Mooney's case and Kirkendall's case, we went up on several times on interlocutory appeals. They won't go there. Because the thing, like, I kept going to the Fifth Circuit, and I didn't have the brief done for United States versus United States of America. I got a brief on standing now, and now with what I got here, I'm gonna soup it up more. It's gonna be on steroids. They can't deal with it now.
Well,
I got them lying on the same attorney in two different courts representing two different people. And this says it's got to be the same all the way through. You can't change the plaintiff in the middle of the damn stream.
Well, regardless of whether they call themselves the United States or the United States of America, aren't you entitled to be faced with your accuser in any kind of action?
The United States of America is Congress.
Well, yeah, okay. So if they're going to be accusing you, shouldn't you be able to be confronted with your accuser?
Well, of course, but you don't know any better.
So where do you suppose they would go if you decided that you wanted to be faced with your accuser? I want the United States of America on the stand here.
Well, first of all, you wouldn't know who the counsel is for the United States of America and who is it.
Doesn't matter. You don't want the counsel. You want the person. Not the council. You can't be representative. A council can't be the accuser.
When
the council only represents the accuser. I want to see the accuser on the stand here.
Now, yeah, I know where you're coming from, and you're going out the wrong way. You're using that guy out of Canada, whatever the hell his thing is. I know who you are. They ain't going to go there. You don't understand the issue. The accuser never goes there. It's a fiction in law. United States of America are both fictions. Everything is a fiction in law.
There is a law. There are court cases that say that they can't. You can't be accused or convicted of a crime when there's no party, real party.
I've got
that in some of my briefs. Boy, the volume on this call is really low, Ralph. I can just barely hear you.
The United States is not a person. Definition, it
right.
is a government, and it has to be represented by what's called counsel for the United States or counsel for the United States of America. It ain't in your brief. I know who you are. It ain't in there. They have to be counsel for.
Oh, right.
They're representing that entity, and they will not go there because they can't. And the guy that did...
Seems like he should be able to force the issue.
You use Mark something. What's his last name?
It seems like you should be able to be faced with your accuser regardless of who the accuser is. I understand that this is all magic legalese gobbledygook in that arena. But
What was the guy that showed up at your trial? Mark, what's his last name?
Oh, yeah, him.
What's his name? I can't remember.
Stevens.
Mark Stevens?
Yeah.
He's stuck in a bunch of BS. I sat and listened to it, and I'm laughing. Wasn't funny, but I'm sitting there. I said, this is baloney. The jury was laughing. It's, he don't have a clue what's going on. You don't?
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm
yeah, your signal is getting really messed up, Ralph. I'll just hang up and listen to you on the air. But
no, that's fine. I'm not trying to put you down because you were fighting.
All right, thanks.
Okay. This Mark Stevens is a crock. He doesn't understand what's going on. He's got a little thing. I want to see I'm a part of the blah, 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 the part of the... If you're not under the laws of the United States, where in the hell are you? Doesn't understand the issue. James is a good guy. I met him. I know who he is. He lives in Alaska. He got screwed big time. They lied on the stand, and nobody did anything about it. No. Because Mark Stevens is stuck on some little simple thing that's total smoke and mirrors nonsense. God, I hate these damn... Learn. Get your facts. Don't just get stuck. I've changed. I used to say initially go to tax court. Now I changed. I do not go to tax court. It helps if you've been there and you get they kick you out with no notice of deficiency, you can use it, but they don't abide by it because there's no law. The issue is who are you and do you have standing? And now the predicate is regulations. If you're going to use regulation, the predicate is what? What's the predicate? What's the predicate for laws of the United States? What is it? The House must pass it. The Senate must pass it. The President either signs it or it vetoes over, or you get a two-thirds override. That is the predicate for a law of the United States. What's the predicate, the foundation for regulations? That's a killer. Because nobody's doing it. That was the only purpose for the Administrative Procedures Act for the Matrix. Its only purpose was the predicate. What does it take to have a substantive or a substantive, whichever way you want to pronounce it, regulation? That was the only issue. I got it in black and white. They admit it. That was the only purpose. So the question becomes, is your regulation... meet the predicate, the foundation requirements of procedure to have the force effect of law according to Chrysler B. Brown. Does it or not? None of them do. And nobody challenges it. I don't think people understand. They don't put it together. They don't line out what you really want to look for. That's an important issue. You're charged with a statute. Wouldn't you want to know that the House and the Senate had voted on it at least, or the President signed it or something? Oh, God, I'd like to think so. That's the whole issue with regulations. They don't have any force and effect of law because the Congress in 1946 said, here are their requirements. They're found in the Administrative Procedures Act of Sections 3 and Sections 4. You have to have notice. Well, that's a law of the United States. Got to have so we can figure out what you guys are doing. And what's 4? Section 4. Here's how it works. How many attorneys are going to tell you what I'm telling you now? And I can prove it all. They print it. There must be. In the Federal Register, which they did in 1935, where they made the president a federal agency, that's his, he does executive orders. The agencies do regulations. And there's only one kind, the predicate. It's called a substantive regulation. It was Section 4 of 1946. Now it's codified in 5 U.S.C. 553 B, C, and D. What is it? They don't make it real simple. The first regulation, preliminary regulation, they proposed must state, I am making a subsidy regulation. Just like Congress when they make laws, or their public laws even, versus their, other nonsense orders and other junk that they do. They must say what they're doing, because we have a right to know. They must state in the proposed regulation it is in compliance with 5 U.S.C. 553B. Which means what? It means we've given notice. We're going to make a subsidy regulation. We are going to allow comments. We're going to answer them. That's all it means. And you've got a right to go in and take it on. Big dang deal. Can you imagine a law of the United States that's sitting in the transitional part of the House or Senate and say, I'm going to challenge it? Of course not. Supreme Court says, wait a minute, there's no law. In this world, the Matrix, you can challenge their proposed regulations because you're supposed to get up every morning and check and see how many of those damn things, thousands of them that they put in there. You can challenge. You can challenge it, take it to court, or you can say, I got a comment. Oh, whiny. Then they have to come back, this agency has to come back and put in the Federal Register again a final rule. It must state it's in compliance with 553B. That's so that I know they're making subsidy regulations. They must answer all the comments. Big damn deal. Who cares? Don't mean anything. You got some twit sitting in D.C. or God knows where. They don't have any judicial power, no nothing. Then they're supposed to wait under D 30 days because I got time to get my affairs in order. Oh, yeah, I check the Federal Register all the time. I get up every morning and say, wonder what these assholes are doing up there in the D.C. These idiots. These jerks. These insurrectionists. I mean, they're outside the law. And then Congress has a 6 months overview to say, I don't know, what do you think about those guys? Are they screwing those citizens of the United States good enough? Yeah, we'll just leave them alone. And then in 6 months, it's written into concrete. That's how it works. How many people can tell you and explain that? So how do you prove it? Well, first of all, you got to go look at the Code of Federal Regulations because it ain't in the Code of Federal Regulations. You got to go to the Federal Register underneath it. Everyone is mandated to publish in the Federal Register, and that's where you go look. You go look and see, okay, in the Federal Register, does it say I'm making a subsidy reg under 5 U.S.C. 553? They don't do them, folks, because they can't. And the IRS even admits it. They had a Federal Register in 1954. They printed in the very 19... on page 3 of every IRS book. Go look on it. There's a Federal Register printed. I think it's 19 FR 5197 or something like that. The last paragraph's missing of that Federal Register. It's only a page, not even a whole page. They leave out the last part that says we are going to be in compliance with Section 4 for making subsidy regs. That's like Congress and the House saying, we're going to do laws, but we're not going to have a vote. Duh. Are we that stupid? Yep. Because we don't know. They don't put this procedure, what I'm telling you, black and white out. They make interpretive regs. How in the hell can an agency interpret a statute? Which ain't even a statute, it's a public law. They're not judiciary. The court has said interpretive regs are not binding. Even the Attorney General, 1941, they're not binding. So why are we obeying them? Because I don't know no better. I go to the lawyer and he don't know no better. Most of them don't. And the ones that do ain't going to help you. Because they're in on it. And they put this nonsense in two books. I can't think of the name either one. But it's to help Congress to do their regulations. Promulgate. They don't put all this stuff in there. But you know what they did do? Put in there? the Attorney's Manual of 1947. You know what it says? I didn't pull this up. We are going to change by statute, that it says, to by law. Because that sounds really good, don't it? By law? We're going to abide. This is going to be by law. Right. You see that, excuse me, you see that all the time. This is in accordance, and we're doing it by law. Does that mean laws of the United States? No. So what does it mean? Let me bring up 1947 here. I'll find it just a minute here. By law, here we go right here. And it's still used. It's a con. The original draft of Section 9A limited the imposition of sanctions to those as specifically authorized by statute. The change of the word statute to law was intentional in the APA, so as to recognize that any agency may impose a sanction or issue a substantive rule, or order, if such power is authorized not only by statutes, wouldn't you think that they'd be operating under the authority of a statute? No. But by treaties. You believe the agencies can operate by treaties? Court decisions. Oh, this is the one I love. Commonly recognized administrative practices or other law. Those are two beauties. Commonly recognized administrative. We've been getting away with it. Can you make this up? You can't make up something like this. Fred in Michigan, question or comment?
Yeah, Ralph.
Right. Oh, there you are. Okay, go ahead.
So in these military tribunal proceedings, I think they're not, actually adjudicating...
I'll stop you right there. They're not military. What they are is outside the Constitution. It's a total overthrow of our government. Go ahead.
All right. Well, okay. So they're adjudicating a presumed valid contract with the corporate trust person, the all-cap legal person estate trust is the citizen of the United States. And that was established with the Hypothecation Act of 1933, part of H.J.R. 192, I'm sure. I don't have the evidence.
Nope. The citizen of the United States was established in 1866, and they put it in the 14th Amendment, and that's the beginning of this nonsense.
Well,
they created a status. It's actually called a status. It's like you can assume the status of a landlord or a tenant, but they don't have political rights. That's the problem that people can't understand. And I've got a whole bunch of briefing on that to explain it out. But the bottom line is, a citizen of the United States has no political rights. Go ahead.
A citizen of the United States is a corporate trust person. And when you go in there, you have two choices. In this system, you're either a debtor or you're a creditor. Debtor or creditor. And for James and whoever else has ears and a functioning brain, there's a presentation that even you would be impressed with. It's called Through the Book, T-H-R-U, Through the Book, one phrase. That's the YouTube channel. Through the Book. And the title is Get Out of Jail Free, Learn Trust Law. Get Out of Jail Free, Learn Trust Law Through the Book. And it explains...
Okay, I'm going to stop you right there, but I'm going to listen because, see, we can have a discussion. What you're trying to do is use commercial law, the UCC. Is it used? Absolutely. Is it an all caps name? Absolutely. Does it have effect on what's going on? Absolutely. But it is not foundational law. It's total nonsense, because there is no rule of law in common in commercial law in the UCC. I've used it.
You say it's nonsense. Let me respond to that. Kobe Bryant had a legal action against him. He went in and he declared that the legal document contract was devoid of his authorized
federal or state.
I don't know if it was federal. It was in California. Okay. That's all I meant.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, I've got all kinds of stories I can tell you about cases dismissed, and I could make up excuses why they were, but I'm telling you what, it ain't going to work for everybody. I have to get to the foundational stuff, and I don't doubt it happened. I'm not calling you that what to say is not true, but I would have to see the documents because I have, like I said, I've had so many cases dismissed. I've won so many traffic citations and misdemeanors dismissed, and I could say, well, it's because of this, it's because of that. You have to look at the paperwork. Well, just because they do doesn't mean that it's really the fundamental thing. Go ahead.
The driver's license is a presumed valid contract. Presumed valid.
Nope. You're wrong again.
Right? And everyone nope. attaches their autograph as an authorized signature. So, Mr. Persecutor, explain to me what an authorized signature is.
Let me You know where the driver's license comes from?
Probably some star chamber.
Okay, here's how it works, and I got the evidence. First of all, you go in, and that brand new car, every brand new car, there is a thing called an attorney in fact contract, which is like an express contract. You give to the financial officer. You say, I am giving up all right, title, and interest to that brand new vehicle, and there is a piece of document called a manufacturer statement of origin, and whoever possesses that is an absolute total owner. He has everything. If he has possession, he has possession, right of possession, right of property. Most people never even seen one of them. Now they take that affidavit that you signed, it's notarized, and they take the MSO up here, they hand carry them because it's money to over to Palmer, to DMV, and they give that to Palmer. The Palmer then, the state, I don't know what they do with it after it's been collateralized. I'm going to get to that at some point. They send me back a certificate of title. And do you know what it says?
Yeah.
There may be other security interests not shown. That's using the commercial law. And they got a special thing in Anderson's where they don't have to disclose that. Anderson's, which is the Bible on UCC. So now you're driving a government-owned car. It's right in the Anchorage code today. They can't issue tickets except if it's a government-owned or government-driven vehicle. That's what got me started. And I spent tens of thousands of dollars because I wasn't smart enough to go to the original documents. So you're driving the government car, and that driver's license that you get when you sign up, it goes straight back to the National Voter Registration Act of 1993 to D.C., and you're under the plenary of Congress, and I got it all documented. Go ahead.
That's all right, Ralph. Now, the affidavit of attorney, in fact, is that presented to the contracting purchaser at the time of the purchase agreement? Is that presented?
Yeah, a whole pile of papers. You got this whole damn big pile of papers, and you're so interested like I was. Who reads all that crap? You got all kinds of places. Sign here, sign here, sign here, sign here, sign here. And you sign.
Oh, boy.
And it's a single page. So if you haven't seen one, I'll send it. Send me an email at irs@alaskaminuteman.com, and I'll send it to you. And all I had to do was it pisses me off because I spent years fighting this. Tens of thousands of dollars. As I got a lot smarter, I finally got down. You know, there's got to be a real foundational reason. Start at the beginning of the issue. It's like Esau in the Bible. He signed away his birthright, and it's the citizen of the United States. That is the foundation. So I said, okay, let me go.
So people are just so arrogantly ignorant, stupid, dumb, that they presume there's no scamming occurring, and yet it's what it is.
How are we going to know?
Deliberate.
They don't teach us. Most people don't even know what an attorney in fact contract is or an implied in law contract, which is a 1040 form. If nobody brings that up in court. A 1040 is implied in law.
Yeah, but here,
I am admitting I have you an obligation, and you don't owe me a damn thing. Why would I do that?
Well, an authorized signature, authorized signature is predicated upon full disclosure in good faith. And in the case of the purchase,
nobody knows how to argue it. And they get you on a return.
Yeah.
Well, there's thousands of people lost all their stuff because you didn't file a return. Well, the question becomes, and by the way, they have made the W-4. Where did I volunteer? That's the W-4.
Yeah.
Well, everybody does that. Now they've got the new W-4 where you just fill out the name and stuff and you write exempt underneath. It's actually constitutional. Somebody's changing some of this stuff on this to make it constitutional in the IRS or somebody. I don't know who.
God's chosen people are doing it. God's chosen people. They're the ones. You know, the ones that say that.
Let me give you just, I mean, I'm not against you, because I like to have good discussions. Don't believe anybody that tells you anything unless you can see the documents and read them yourself. And use your own judgment, common sense, and critical thinking. Because we have got so many scammers like that Mark Stevens that led James down the road. He's a scammer. His stuff is crap. He can't prove it. And when some people hear it, it's nonsense. It sounds good, but it's not true.
Well,
that's why
You mentioned the Shitar. You mentioned Shitar in the past, and the Shitar with the Sesti Qui Vi Trust Act, 1666.
I'm sorry, start at the very beginning. I lost the. What did you start off with? I lost that. What did you say?
Well, you mentioned the Shitar. There's Judas Shapiro at Georgetown.
Oh,
I think it was around the year 2000.
It's called a Jewish Shitar. S-H-E-T-A-R.
Yes,
today
it's called
a security agreement. I have been there. I went through that damn thing. And you know what they say? If they don't feel secure, regardless, I had all my payments made up because I was just one of the original document back. They just say, hey, we're done. All the money's doing payable right now. They give you 10 days.
Wow.
I couldn't believe it. Thank God somebody got a handshake, gave me $110,000, and I saved all my stuff. Because when you sign one of them, the only thing you walk away with is your shorts, and I'm not even sure they're going to let you keep them. They take everything. And everything I had paid up under Winter Telecom, everything was current. But they pulled the line of credit that I had. They pulled all of the loans I had on the cars, everything. It's doing payable now because they want to pull it. They just say, hey, I don't think you're good for it now. That's called a Jewish Shitar. And if you want to see the brief on it, it's a hell of a read. It started back in the 12th century with the Jews mixing in the commercial law and that. Send an IRS at AlaskaMinuteMan.com and put in Jewish Shitar. It is all the loans, your mortgages, and all that's all based on that Jewish Shitar nonsense. And it's documented.
It is. It is. Yep.
Good night, sweetheart. Good night, sweetheart. Well, the are everywhere. God willing, we will see you next Sunday.
The Rebellion Broadcasting Network late night premiere show of Red Pill Hardcore is hosted by activists that want to hear from you, the listeners, so that you can get involved in the activism. Please call in at 800-313-9443 at 10 p.m. to enter the discussion. To book yourself as a guest, call our studio at 202-657-5715 or contact RBN staff. Remember, keep it real and take the Red Pill.
Is the Second Amendment your line in the sand? Is the United States Constitution important to you? Are you worried about gun confiscation? You need to join us for free at gunconfiscation.com. At gunconfiscation.com, you will meet like-minded patriots, get the latest Second Amendment news, and find anything you need to prepare for gun confiscation. Visit gunconfiscation.com today. That's gunconfiscation.com. Which side are you on?
Listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.